Welcome, everyone, to Season 2, Episode 6 of the Fresh Pinball Podcast. This is Part 2 of the Pinball 2000 episode.
Part 2000, if you will.
I'm pretty excited. To my left sits on the board Mr. Kyle. Mr. Kyle, how are you this fine evening?
I'm flipping fantastic.
Love it. Sitting across from me, Corbin. Corbin, how we feeling?
Feeling good. Been moving a lot of pinballs, getting ready. A lot of spooky pinballs. Been moving a lot of spooky pinballs.
Man,
lately,
this
so.
Build we'll get up into that, though, to but... Pinbrew. Yeah, we're going to take a...
We've been really productive. I feel like the past 2 days, like, it's like, man, if I was productive every day, like at this level every day, shit, who knows what we'd get there.
I feel like a person who actually works like
right.
the last
Seriously,
couple days.
That's what I'm saying.
I don't love
up,
it.
I'm like hitting like four or five places. I'm not setting appointments with people.
Yeah, put heard. Pinballs on the moon.
Yeah, I've been showing up places like
Pinballs on the Moon 2025.
To my right, Zach, how are we doing tonight?
Most excellent. I have a lot of fresh pinball around right now, actually, so
it's
can't be mad.
So we're in Zach's basement again, and I got here before everyone else and Zach's boys. As soon as I walk in, take me by the hand and grab me out to like drag me out to the garage to tell
me
that there's fresh pinball and that there is a game still in the box, and they're looking at me like, can we open it?
Hey, let's open it now.
Can we open it?
As soon as I got home, they're like, let's open it.
Pinball
open
Jeff, it. Can we open the pinball now? And it's like, no,
crazy.
We're going
to
wait on that
We got to wait for
one.
Some people.
It's crazy to think.
So there's 12 pinballs right now in this place.
Damn, we got them up. It's crazy to think that it's like sitting next to the new in box. It's like, oh, there's the Barry O's.
The Barry O's barbecue and
sitting
Pulp
next
Fiction.
To Pulp Fiction in a box.
Well,
like,
and then
shit,
they take me upstairs to show me the box forts that they've made out of the previous fresh pinballs. It's like, man, you guys are living the actual dream right now.
The box dream.
They don't realize it, but they're peaking right now.
They are. They have no clue.
They're living the dream. Living the best.
As soon as I got here, Ollie grabbed my hand and said, fresh pinball? Fresh pinball?
Yes.
And took me out to show me Barry.
Yeah, he couldn't understand when I dropped off the Pulp Fiction in the garage this morning. He's like, what?
And I think he was explaining the layout to me a little bit too.
He'll tell you the shots.
Probably.
He'll tell you the shots.
You want to hit the ramp here with the spinner.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's like, there's a spinner on these ramps.
Yeah. Spinner ramps.
All right, so a quick fact check from the previous episode. We'd talked about some of the operator/security features on Pinball 2000 to where you could turn a key and take off the lockdown bar, pull the glass, be able to fix stuck balls, do all of that fun stuff. And that reminded me that it's not the only time that I've seen that. I actually have a baby Pac-Man that has a similar feature. It has a key on the left-hand side if you're facing the game. Unlock it, releases the control panel, then you can pull the glass and do all of that fun stuff. So I think when we talk to Mr. Gomez, that's something that maybe we should ask about.
You
know, I know
my list.
Their current style of lockdown bar obviously prohibits that, but maybe you know, on pro only, I don't know. Something that's made specifically for operators, like I think it would be cool.
It's been very interesting talking to other operators and just the love of the pros from these operators. Like we were last night, we were up at Madcap, and everybody loves these. They love the pros. They just think they're so reliable and they don't have to mess with them, I guess. I don't know. It's blown my mind.
But at the same time, Matt was talking about, like, he's not afraid to put other off the wall stuff.
Oh, no,
there.
Absolutely not. Yeah, definitely not. Because he had his Lebowski out there. I mean, he also messes with Multimorphic, which is like,
yeah,
that's one step further.
Yeah, I was curious if I was still a GC on that Pulp Fiction out there. Probably
you know,
not at this point.
We didn't even check. We were in and out of there.
We were.
I think the weather would have been better.
The weather was about to come.
I think he posted a picture in. It said like high scores, and then
I think Elton John's right
there was nothing
to.
There. I'm like, damn it. I wonder if
so
my
close.
Initials are still in there.
Yeah.
So close. So, second item on the fact check is Corbin asked me if the Sega Batman Forever, what sort of DMD that was. And I think if I was listening back correctly, said that it was like the thin, longer one.
That's
and it's
what I
not.
Thought.
It's actually a large format DMD.
Oh, it's the same as
yeah, it's like a Frankenstein.
It's like Frankenstein
yeah.
Baywatch.
That's what
style.
Which
thought.
One am I thinking
that's
of
what I
then?
Thought.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
you
I don't
know what?
Why
on that color,
no,
on
the,
that one
the
we
dad,
got for Frankenstein,
the
Dad East. It was on that list, yeah, because it's like that Baywatch. I think there's maybe Frankenstein, maybe one more.
Isn't the Dad East
Star Trek?
Star Trek
has it's that hook. I think has that thin
yeah,
one.
Yeah, the small one.
Yeah, okay.
So that's what it was because I went back to my pictures from TPF and confirmed, and then I went on to colordmd.com because you know.
When you say that totally makes sense though because that when I that
you know what
all
else has that
did.
You know what other game has that
what
Jeff's favorite game of all time
Baywatch
Checkpoint.
Checkpoint.
Checkpoint doesn't have the oversized one.
It's no, it has smaller the
tiny
one, right?
Oh, the tiny one. Yeah.
So Checkpoint's the first DMD game, right?
Yeah.
Ever.
That's what I thought. Yeah, the very first.
Because they moved around the release of something else
another
to get that
license,
out.
Like Porsche. Like, they had Porsche license? Oh. Is that a Chicago, Illinois call?
It might be. Hello. Hello.
Is it working?
No.
Switch him and just talk to him on the phone.
Is Jeff?
Yeah, you there? You there? We're trying to get you ported in here.
Yeah. Breaking news. We have a caller on the line. We will continue the fact check after this brief interview. Mr. Gomez, thank you so much for taking some time to hop onto the podcast with us. We're excited to talk some Pinball 2000.
Hey, guys. Great to talk to you. I can't imagine that in 2024 anyone cares about Pinball 2000. But
oh, yeah, we care.
Happy to talk to you about it.
Yeah, so we're old school nerds of the history of pinball, you know, going all the way back to Angeli Stark Novelty. Corbin and Zach's family have been in pinball and operating for over 100 years. So literally their family goes all the way back to the genesis of everything. And on a previous episode before we had you on, you know, we talked about them actually getting their new inbox, Revenge from Mars, and the excitement that was surrounding all of that.
Putting it all together, something completely new and different.
Excitement / concern, I feel like. It was definitely a little bit of both at the time. But we've had that one. We've had the Revenge since New in Box, and then we did acquire, of course, the Star Wars and then the kit too, because
why not?
It seems cool.
Yeah. So maybe start by taking us back to that era. I mean, you were integral in all of the creation of Pinball 2000, you know, to tell us what the vision was and kind of put us in the time machine and take us way back.
Yeah. So, you know, in probably, I want to say 96 or 97, the pinball market was definitely contracting for the company. It was getting smaller. And the company was beginning to try to figure out, you know, how to reinvent itself out of the, you know, out of the situation, if you will. They put out, that you have to remember that product development, everybody in product development was focused on designing whatever game they were working on. There were, I think if I recall, six or seven design teams. Everybody was on a cadence in their games, you know, meaning that, you know, the company basically launched, I believe it was, you know, a Bally title and a Williams title in the fall of every year. Maybe there was another, I can't remember what the cadence was. Maybe there was another couple of games launched in the spring, but regardless, teams were, you know, working in staggered fashion towards their games. And, Neil Nicastro and Kenny Fidesna, Neil was the CEO. Kenny, ran product development, and, they came down and they said, you know, we've got the situation, you know, we want you guys to think about what could be the future of pinball. What could we do to transform the game, in a significant way from what we knew of at the time. And honestly, at that particular moment in time, we had done a lot of things within the context of what the game was, you know, toys that continue to evolve, ramps.
All the mechs and everything from that era are just, I mean, one after another, each game had something different, something unique that, you know, makes that game, that made that game, you know, different, you know, whether it's the theater, the box on theater, they're endless. Each game had something very unique.
Well, even when you're talking that 96, 97 period, I mean, we're big NBA Fast Break fans here. So
the links are the best.
So, I mean, So Fast Break, that in and of itself, I was trying new stuff, right? I was trying to completely, you know, completely different a scoring theme to the game, the ability to connect and link games and play head to head.
That system.
Those are fairly
people love it.
Fairly radical ideas.
They are, and they love it.
Oh, yeah.
Once they understand it, and you get them in an organized fashion, and you get them like corralled to what they're doing. Oh, the people who normally sometimes girlfriend or just anybody who isn't normally as excited, you put them in front of those fast breaks though, and get them going. It makes them, they get excited about pinball.
The competition comes out.
Yeah, fast breaks, linked fast breaks to this day draw a crowd wherever you see them.
There's no question. Yeah, we tour our set that we have, and we'll do events and, you know, tournaments with them. But yeah, anywhere we take them, we pop up with them, it's guaranteed to draw a crowd.
Yep. So we were trying a lot of different things. And you can tell, I mean, fast break in and of itself, right? A game in the back box, a new scoring technique, right? And connect the games, right? Mm-hmm. So I mean, I was trying everything.
And so we started that
there was a team that was sort of ready to build another game. So they were in the sweet spot of being able to start. When the rest of us were kind of tied up with games, you know, I was tied up with Monster Bash, and I'd finished Fast Break and I was actually working on Monster Bash. And so the guy that was ahead of me amongst all the designers that had his next game was yet to be conceived, and he had started fooling around with the notion of what does a next gen platform look like was John Papaduke. And what he did was he had a really convoluted cabinet that sort of folded up, and it was this giant thing, but it had a 26 or 25 inch CRT the head of the game would have been.
Was it reflecting similar to the Pinball 2000 or
no.
was it mounted down?
No, it was just, like, no. It was
the back
direct
box.
View.
Just the back box.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
It was direct view.
I bet that thing weighed a ton.
Yeah.
It was insane. Yeah. The thing that motivated me was I thought that's not that clever, right? It's like you just replaced the back box with a giant TV.
Right.
So I was like, I didn't like a lot of things about it. I didn't like the fact that it, you know, to this day, I feel like a back glass is an element, a significant element of pinball. And
absolutely,
I think
100%.
I think companies that like fill the back box with a monitor and stuff are off base. You know, I think that you're missing a key element of pinball, which
you're
is
losing
glass,
part
right?
of the
so,
overall art pack.
The art,
I mean,
yeah.
The whole
that's
thing
right.
is a work
you
of
are.
Art in itself. And the back glass,
yeah,
the play field,
right.
the cabinet art, I mean, yep. the apron, the, it's all absolutely elements of it that all add to it.
Right.
So as a company, as you guys are going through this, you know, some of the reading and rumors and, you know, everything else, I'd read and seen that there was Pinball 2000 or what John Papaduke was working on that kind of ended up becoming. Pinball 2000, you guys were actually on the other side. We're looking at virtual pinball as well. Is there any truth
to
that?
Is that like what John Papaduke was working on, or is that something totally different?
No, he was working. The project was called Pinball 2000, even when John started it. And it had a back box, you know, like I said, a giant CRT in the back box. Yeah, and he had bought a Nintendo, whichever Nintendo, I think a Nintendo 64, I think at the time, and he had hooked a Nintendo 64 to it, and his demo was basically, you know, here's this video game up here playing, and here's this pinball machine down here, and I remember being at Midway, Bally Midway, back at original Bally Midway, where I started, and in those days, you know, we did, you know, the pinball guys did Granny and the Gators and Baby Pac-Man. And that was basically, you know, that was essentially two games,
right?
Two separate games, right? You play up here, then you play down here,
play
up here,
the pinball,
play down
then
here.
You play the arcade, right?
And John's thing was no different, right? It was like you played up there, you played down here.
The newer version of it, in a sense.
Right. It was two different experiences, or, you know, the notion of playing the video game and then playing the pinball machine.
Interesting.
It was to my perception, they were disjointed experiences.
Yeah.
Right. It was like sort of like, right. It was like saying, I'm going to dedicate the entire back box to a video mode, right? Like a Terminator 2 video mode, except that that's, you know, I've got a whole back box here that's dedicated to this. Now, obviously. Yeah, I mean, but obviously, you know, he was going to, you know, obviously there would have been presentation events and the back glass would have been a dynamic back glass and all that kind of stuff, right? So that's where he was going. Now, I got to tell you that I had my head in Monster Bash and I was half paying attention. I didn't think much of his problem or of his solution. I was kind of like, yeah, you know, that's like, it's just like, I don't see it. So. Yeah. Most of the people up in product development, all of the teams didn't have a lot of faith in what he was doing. So there wasn't a lot of, you know, camaraderie about it, or there wasn't a lot of guys walking around the floor going, wow, that's so cool. Yeah. That's our future. You know, in fact, everybody was like, you know, I've kind of seen that before. I don't get it, you know? And
just
so there was a lot of that.
And it really didn't.
No,
maybe Pac-Man and Granny's Gators are okay, but they really wouldn't. I wouldn't say they were successes in a sense. Like people, they really didn't take off.
No, they weren't. They weren't. And they were, you know, they were
cool for what they were.
Remember, they were. And they were at a time when pinball was fighting for its life also.
Yeah.
Right. So in those days, I was on the Midway side. And I remember that. Like, you know, they had closed down the Bensonville factory, which was, and they had moved, they had a major layoff. They had consolidated the pinball factory into the video game factory, and we had absorbed a bunch of their staff. You know, that's when I met guys like Jim Patlin and stuff, was when they brought them over and put them with us over on the video game side. And that was like 1984. 80, 80s, you know, right, yeah, in that time frame. Yeah, 83, 84, right? And so so that's when those games happened, because pinball was, you know, on the ropes. Mm-hmm. And so that was the you know, the driving force between, hey, why don't we integrate pinball with something modern like a video game, et cetera.
And video games were so hot back in the early 80s, too, that, I mean,
they were. I mean, back in 19, you know, when that happened, the Midway division the revenues from the Midway division were larger than the revenues for the entire mother company.
Oh, I'm sure. My dad talks, you know, about that era and remembering just getting truckloads of Pac-Man and Space Invaders. And he said the game, the turnover rate
just crazy.
Was just crazy. Like, you know, you'd have a game.
It's insane. Hot.
Yeah. He said the stories, it would have been so crazy to see, but yeah, that's what it sounded like. The games were, video games were so hot.
Yeah. Right. So now, you know, fast forward to 1998, and you know,
another wall,
and we're
another
in the same
point.
We're in the same boat, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so one day, management had sort of gotten wind of the fact that, hey, you know, the guys up in product development are not the guys. You know, they're not that interested in this new version.
Yeah.
And so, Neil Nicastro, CEO, and Kenny Fidesna, and Larry DeMar, who was, I think at that time, running our group, running product development, they gathered a meeting of all the designers and some of the key software developers. And they pulled us in a room. And I remember Neil said, you know, if you guys... you know, you're either with this thing or you're not, but, you know, we got to do something. And it was a really depressing meeting, because basically nobody in the meeting was very excited about this. And also, you know, and Neil was not a guy to mince words. So, I mean, I think he alluded to the fact that our future hung in the balance. And so we came out of the meeting, and Pat Lawler and I were kind of talking, and he said, you know what? He said, we got to do something because this is, you know, this is going to go in that direction. And I had tried in the meeting, I had tried to describe to them the, you know, I said, hey guys, there's another way. There's like, you know, there's a way of combining the video images right down on the play field. And everybody thought I was crazy, but the reality is that it was, you know, it was very driven by the work I had done on coin operated upright video games in the early 70s in the late 70s when I broke into the business. I was in Midway and it was very common at the time for us to use a combining mirror.
Yeah.
A lot of them. It allowed us to take the monitor, put it at the bottom of the cabinet. So the cabinet wasn't very deep, mm-hmm. and you could combine elements of scenery with the elements on a video, because back in those days, the video hardware wasn't very powerful. And so you couldn't draw scenery. Like, you couldn't draw a moon for Space Invaders, but you could take a plastic vacuum form moon and put it behind, you know, so that the Space Invaders looked like they were landing on the plastic moon. Right.
Yep,
and yeah. So those tricks are tricks that I sort of, you know, was exposed to when I was on that side of the house working on cabinet designs and things for the video games. You know, we did we had done a game called Cosmic Cruiser, which combined, it looked like the video, you know, it looked like the video elements, like video characters were flying into this spacecraft that was like, and it was a physical three-dimensional plastic spacecraft that was projected into, you know, so that the two images, the video looked like it was interacting with the three-dimensional plastic element, right? So I had this all in my head, the back of my head. The real twist that I added to it was the notion that if I can take the video element, like, for the sake of everybody understanding, if you take a Martian and you can make the Martian look like he's standing on a play field, and I put a rollover switch directly beneath mm-hmm. that Martian, when the ball sees that, when the switch sees the ball go over it, I can transform, I can sense that signal, and then in essence, I can transform that Martian.
Yep.
I can make that Martian blow up. I can make that Martian go away. I can make that Martian grow. I can explode him. I can do all kinds of things with him, right? So that was the whole trick. And by the way, that's what I got a patent on. I got a patent on the coincidence between a virtual object and a real object.
Oh, wow.
The patent's expired. Right? Okay. The patent's expired now.
Definitely. We talked about patent a little bit on a previous episode.
Yeah,
because
it's sort of expired. You know, it's expired. It's gone. It's like,
well,
back in those days, it's like 17 years or something that it has, you know, that's valid. So whatever. But that was the magic, right? So I'm in this meeting talking about this. Pat Lawler had been in a similar situation as me at the time. As a matter of fact, I knew him from that time. He had been working at Dave Nutting and Associates. Dave Nutting and Associates was a captive R&D house for Bally Midway. So we used to, him and I, we would see each other at trade shows. We would go to whenever the company went to a trade show, after they would have like sort of an after show report meeting where, you know, they would order food and all the designers would be there and everybody would talk about what they saw that was cool, or what, you know, how things compared to things we were working on, et cetera. And so I knew Pat from those days. And of course, this is before pinball. And then once I joined pinball, Pat was, you know, Pat and I were, you know, became friends. But but I tell you the story because Pat was very familiar with, you know, the mirror tricks that we did back in those days. Right.
Yep.
So we came out of the room and he goes, I know exactly what you're talking about. And I said, well, I know you do because you were there. And I said, but the twist I want to put on it is I think I can sense the ball at video, you know, objects by simply putting a switch. And he understood immediately. So he said, we got to do something because they're going to go in this direction. If we don't do something, they're going to build that monstrosity that John's pushing. And so
you had a responsibility for pinball.
Yeah, we did. And so we said, and I mean, I'm like, Pat, I'm up to my ass in Monster Bash. And so, I was intrigued by the notion that we got to do something, you know? So, one night I was working on Monster Bash, and I remember, I'll never forget this. I went in to see Lyman Sheets, who was working on Bash with me. And I had made a foam core model, which I still have. I'll send you guys pictures of it. And I had taken a slide, a 35 millimeter slide I had laying on my desk. It was actually a Johnny Mnemonic slide from when I worked on that project. And I mounted it in such a way with a piece of smoked acrylic to simulate the thing that I was talking about. And I used a flashlight, pointed the flashlight at it, and I could see, hey, this is going to work. So, you know, imagine I put the slide up where the video image would be. I pointed the flashlight down. Once I show you these images, you'll understand what I'm talking about. But so I went running into Lyman's office and I said, check this out. This is going to be so cool. Lyman was like, so deep in Monster Bash, you'd give a shit. You know, he's like, yeah, whatever, dude. What, you know, whatever turns you on. And so I showed it to Pat, and Pat says, we got to build this thing. And I said, yeah, well, we can't build it here. And so he had a shop in his garage out at his house in Marengo. And so we went on this period of time. I don't know what it was, maybe. I don't know what it was. It took us 3 weeks or something, and I drove out to his house. And
so just after work, you're just like, I'm gonna go work on this other thing.
Saturdays,
3 weeks. That's
Saturdays. It was brutal. You know, Saturdays and Sundays we were out there, and we built one. And I had this old Amiga 1000 that I had built a bunch of video art on from back in, you know, earlier times when I was working on video games, and I happened to have this big robot that I built in Amiga on Deluxe Paint Animation, which was a program that ran on the Amiga, and Electronic Arts made it, and it was a great program at the time, and I loved it. But anyway, so I had this robot, and so we used a 19-inch monitor hooked to my Amiga, and actually it was the 19-inch monitor that I used to use with the Amiga to simulate the 19-inch monitors that would go into the video games that I was making art for. So we created this mock-up, and we brought it in, and we had the robot, you know, standing on the play field, and it was big. It was impressive. And, you know, what the hell do we call this thing? We called it, like, I've got a picture of us standing next to the cabinet. I'll have to find it and send it to you also.
We're definitely excited to see.
Yeah. So then, you know, so we brought this thing in, and we did it, you know, we started getting pressure from Larry saying, you guys got to, whatever you got going on, you got to bring it in. And we're like, okay. So we brought this thing in and we showed it. We blew everybody away. And everybody was like, oh yeah, we're building, this is the one, we got to build this. And so, so immediately, like, they just totally revamped everything, and we, you know, it became like, okay, you know, we're gonna, you know, this is what we're gonna do, and
so they dropped John Papaduke's design. It was this is better.
They dropped.
They
dropped John.
Was it immediately Revenge from Mars 2, or did you start having the layout and then they decide, you guys decided?
No. So what happened there was that the very first thing we started working on was, before we had a game, first of all, I had to finish Bash. So
right.
I was finishing up Bash. And then while I was finishing up Bash, I was working with the mechanical engineering team on you know, how do we get the mirror, you know, how do we get the, you know, the glass and the position of the monitor and the cabinet and all that kind of stuff. So we started working with that. At the same time, the electronics, the hardware engineers and the software engineers started talking about what does a pinball focused video system look like, because we didn't have one, right? We had, you know, whatever we were doing with WPC95 at the time was, it had support for dot matrix display. It didn't have support for full color video, right? So
totally different.
Makes sense.
So we had, you know, so that was like a whole effort, right? Like those guys went down the path of, you know, and one of the things that they had at the time, they thought that, hey, why don't we use a PC as the basis for
the core of it,
you know, for the video side, the core side. And then the vision, it turned out to be a flawed vision, but the vision was that as PC technology evolved, we would be able to grow with it. And it turned out it was like, that was a nightmare, because like the mother, you know, the PC manufacturers, like, they would change the format of their motherboard, and all of a sudden you're
every
like,
month, every
oh,
month.
Oh crap. Yeah.
Every
you know,
month.
We were
then,
like, oh crap.
We're
just like, so much for that idea. You know? So you're like, whatever, there was a, you know, I don't remember what it was, ATX 2 or whatever. And so they would just change it and you'd be shit out of luck. So
a whole nother variable, but while designing a pinball, like, oh, now we're going to change the base,
right,
of it
so,
too.
So they went, you know, they were exploring all of that. That wasn't, you know, and they were exploring that. We were daydreaming what the system could be, all the new cool stuff we'd be able to do with it, you know, like service playfield maps, and we could connect the games to the internet,
yes,
you know, and all this stuff, right?
Yes, which absolutely is. So, I have questions about that. We'll get back to that. I have questions.
Yeah. So we and so that went on. We launched Bash, and then we started, and then it was like, there was a rule at Midway that the guy that sort of pioneered a technology or you know, brought a technology to bear was the guy that got to build the first game on it. So
seems fair.
So that was, you know, that was a standing rule in product development. Like, you know, if you invented a thing, you got to use that thing first.
Yeah. Do you have any good examples of that?
Him.
2000?
Well, yeah, Pinball 2000 is a great one, right? That's how come I got to do the first game. But, yeah. You know, over the years, I'm trying to think, like the dot matrix, right? Like, I think the guy that pushed the dot matrix was Steve Ritchie, and
T2,
it was,
yeah.
You know,
T2,
you know, and so, you know, it was like his, you know, T2, I think it was T2. I can't remember.
Checkpoint.
What the debut.
DMD, yeah.
Yeah. That was, Island, and so that was, and, but remember, that would have been a different company,
yeah,
right?
So, yeah.
Right. So, yeah. So, but it, at Williams, the deal was, if you invent the tech, you get to pioneer it. You get to, you know, you get to be the first guy on it.
That's very
cool.
Which makes
that.
A ton
so
of
I got,
sense
you know,
because you're the visionary behind it. You might as well bring that product
through
to market.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, so I got to do that first game. And then, so the conversation started talking about the game and didn't know what we were going to do. And, Larry had, you know, and the sales guys and everybody in the company had been talking, and everybody was like, you know what? Attack from Mars was underserved, meaning that we didn't make enough of them. There was a lot of demand for the game and it was well loved. And so they said, why don't we do a sequel to Attack from Mars? And so they came down to see me and they said, you know, what do you think about this? And I said, oh, I'm all right with it if Brian's all right with it. Well, Brian had left the pinball side to go work on the video game side. And so he was across the street at Midway working on his first video game on under the Midway flag, which I believe was Arctic Thunder. And so he was working on Arctic Thunder. So they went and talked to him. I don't think at the time, I don't think he was real keen on it. You know, hey, that's my thing. I don't, you know. But they talked him into it, and then they said, you know, you can collaborate if you want. And so I started working down the path of Revenge from Mars. We had a, you know, the almost everybody in product development, except for a small group of people that were working on Cactus Canyon, almost everybody else was working on the Pinball 2000 effort. So
all hands
there was
on deck.
Lots of, yeah, it was all hands on deck, and it was really cool from the standpoint that, you know, it was sort of the first at that, you know, now I've done it a bunch of times, but back then it was the first time when somebody said, you know, hey, here's the keys to the car, man, have a good time, you know? And so I had a lot of, you know, I had a lot of control. I had a lot of ability to influence the vision, and I had a big resource group in all, you know, everybody in engineering, with the exception of, like I said, a small team supporting Cactus development was at my disposal, right? So we just started. I mean, we daydreamed a lot. We invented new stuff like on a regular basis, right? Like, I mean, there's so much cool stuff in that Pinball 2000, right? Like the two lock system for the front moldings.
Yeah, we're literally sitting here looking at a Revenge from Mars right now, and that was a big topic of conversation. So, was the access for the location to be able to take the lockdown bar off, remove the glass, and get a stuck ball out, but they're not have access to the money.
My dad didn't even know about this game, and you know, he got it new. He's operated it since then, except for the short period of time where we couldn't get buttons for it. But either way, that was back when parts were impossible to get for anything, but he didn't even know about it. And then I started doing research, and we were talking about it. I'm like, I wonder if these keys are. I looked the keys are, and I showed him. He's like, I had no idea I could do that, you know. And it's like, oh, interesting.
So a lot of stuff like that, right? Like that, the connector header at the back to facilitate changing out play fields.
Yeah, very
right.
Quick change type deal.
The notion of, you know, going to decals on the cabinets, and just. I mean, everybody, the two button, you know, flipper button thing to add flexibility to future games. There was just so much in that went into the development of it. There are some things that I think I screwed up. You know, they're like, I think that I made the whole notion of transporting the thing. I should have come up with a more clever system of to hinge the back box, and you know, I really should have paid a lot more attention to that at the time. Like, we were blinded by the notion that to American operators, they were never going to take the head off. They were just going to put the thing on their pickup truck and move it.
Yep, that's what we do.
But it's heavy and it doesn't
move nicely. Hey,
yeah,
at least we fold the heads down.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. But to the Europeans, right, they didn't have, you know, they don't have F-150s, right? So they were trying to move, you know, they were trying to move these things with a different kind, you know, it's much smaller vehicles, and almost, you know, and you know, you have to remember it's 1999, right? Yeah, it's not today. So and so I think that was an issue. So those are things that I think, you know, we could have done better.
I mean, the sales were still impressive. I mean, they still had solid sales compared to like what else was selling at that time. I mean,
everybody thinks that pinball failed because Pinball 2000 wasn't successful. That's hardly the case. I'll tell you exactly what that was about, right? Like, it was a business thing that said, if it costs, you know, I've got different things I can do with a certain amount of money. I can, you know, if I go into this in the pinball business, they could have, if they kept this, you know, they could have, it was a viable business for anyone else, meaning that it wasn't a business that was losing money. It was a business that wasn't growing the way it used to, but it was a sustainable business if you could make X number of games a year, which Pinball 2000 proved it could do.
Absolutely.
What the difference was that they looked at the dollars equation, and they said, if I put the same amount of money into a slot machine business, the returns would be exponential. So they were very open about it. They essentially told us that. They said, you know what, I could stay in this business, I could be in this business, but I mean, Nicastro, and to his credit, you know, his job as a CEO is to It's a publicly held company. It was to make profits for the stockholders. It wasn't to like coddle the pinball division. And so he basically said, you know, I'm gonna take a flyer on two things that are growth opportunities for the business. One, the value of the video game division is much greater, and I'm gonna spin them off into their own, you know, publicly held company. And I'm gonna take what's left of the company, and I'm gonna point it at the slot machine business, and I'm gonna blow that up. I'm gonna do great there. So, and he was right, and he did. And so, you know, that's the real story as to why Williams is no longer in the pinball business. Everybody likes to say, you know, Pinball 2000 failed. No, I don't think Pinball 2000 failed.
It was money.
There's another thing that everybody seems to forget. We never pitched it. We never pitched Pinball 2000 as the sole product, the sole pinball product. Now, the company didn't agree with us, but a lot of us that actually were there and were on the floor saying, I know you got to take one shot, but honestly, don't you need two lines? Don't you need a conventional line and a Pinball 2000 line?
Absolutely.
And so we said, hey, you know, like you got Cactus Canyon, that's conventional product, and you got Pinball 2000 product. The two products can be complementary.
Yeah.
Now I got to tell you, the sales side of the house, they did not agree. They felt like,
they thought it was like an all or nothing pinball thing. You're either doing Pinball 2000 or you're doing classic WPC.
Yeah, that's right. You're either reinventing the pinball business or you're not. And so that's a tough, you know, that's a tough place to be. Yeah. I did my damnedest, and I think we all did. And
absolutely shows. I mean, Revenge from Mars is an awesome game.
Amazing.
It sold. I mean, the numbers on it were good. Everything about it was good. It just, unfortunately, gambling, you know, was the slot machines won.
It's a much shinier thing, you know.
People like much, stuff that much pays shinier out, I guess. Thing.
Just the genesis. Well, it's just Revenge from Mars
about
by
it.
Itself. They, of you know the cheeky callouts.
Oh,
and
the callouts on this. That's a whole another.
All the modes are great.
Yeah,
pickup truck.
We had so much fun. You know, we had so much fun with it. It was that era, right? When you're working on something that's not a license, right? You have so much freedom that, you know, you have so much creative freedom that you can do whatever you want. And so, and that's really, that's really the story. And the story was, you know, we can make anything we want. So we did.
It shows because it's so awesome.
Yeah. Well, take us back to the expo that this debuted, because there's been a ton of information of that, of just how.
So they were all connected.
Right.
There,
so we
right?
debuted it.
Is this?
We debuted it. We debuted it in London at the Natural History Museum in London.
Well,
and it was crazy. It was a black tie event, you know, right in the Museum of Natural History in London. I remember these guys, we had a really cool the video game side of the house had a really cool boat racing game called Hydro Thunder. Awesome game. And a guy named Steve Rank was the designer and the guy that drove and led that development effort. And I remember that at the London event, they'd flown a large portion of the Pinball 2000 development team, and they had flown all the Hydro Thunder guys out and everything. And Hydro Thunder is an amazing sit down, you know.
Oh yeah, I know the game. Yeah, it's a fun game for sure. Absolutely.
Well, it's amazing as you're talking about a lot of these video games. You know, Arctic Thunder, Hydro Thunder, Cruisin' USA.
Yeah.
A lot of those, Corbin and Zach's family can still attest to the fact that 20 plus years later, these games still earn on location.
They're out there every day. I still have Exoticas, Cruisin' USAs. I still have Link sets
Worlds.
Of those all over, and they Cruisin' World.
Yep.
And they still earn. They earn just as good as any of the new stuff. I mean.
Oh yeah. So you know, I mean, the thing about it is that. So we went to this show, and Pinball 2000 just blew everybody's heads off to the point that like the Arctic Thunder guys were like getting no love. And they were like so disappointed and frustrated. They had worked their asses off. Their game was amazing. But Pinball 2000, which is so revolutionary to the world, that you know, people were just like, I mean, the crowds at the show, you know, people were like lined up like 10 deep to get at the game. It was just crazy.
Wow. I believe
and
it.
And we had a crap load of them.
And then even after all the cost cutting and saying it's your way or this way, and you finally made it there.
Yeah.
And I mean, the people received crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
No, it was great. Larry DeMar and I were doing switch out of playfield demos. We had this thing down to like 3 minutes. We could switch out of playfield. And I did it so many times. I did the demo so many times in London. When I got home, I was like, my elbow was, you know, killing me. And I went to the doctor and he says, you've got tennis elbow. And I got tennis elbow from like
pinball from 2000 like yanking, elbow.
Yeah, you know, right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was like from yanking playfields in London, like, you know, whatever, 8 demos a day or something, you know.
So it's funny that you're discussing these, because the Pinball 2000 website is still maintained, I believe, by Planetary. So all of the pictures of you demoing, like how all of this stuff works,
is that right? Yeah,
are
yeah.
Still out
still
there.
Active. Yes, I'm looking at them
okay,
right now.
Well, that's real. That was like, you know. Yeah, I had no idea, but
you had gray hair then.
Yes, as some balding men are sitting around this table, we are very jealous of your flowing locks.
I can't take responsibility for my genetics, right? It was a trip. It was, we did it again.
The crowds are excited. Yeah. You know, the brass has to be excited about the reception.
It was awesome. We did it again in Vegas, like, I don't know, a couple of months later for the, spring show was, you know, the Coin-Op spring show, was the American debut. The American debut was no different. It was like just incredible. People loved it. I've come off that, and the second game, the Star Wars game, I was less thrilled with. It was Star Wars was, you know, it was before we had seen that second set of movies, right?
Right.
We didn't know, and we expected. The world expected them to be equally as impactful as the first set of movies.
Was it still the idea back then? You got a script for the movie, or was that long?
It was
gone
released.
By
right,
that point?
Is that still the same when they were releasing them around the same time as the movie?
Not sure I understand the question.
So like with T2, it was, you know, Steve and the crew would get, you know, go out to Hollywood and get an advanced copy of the script or something to know what was coming.
That team was locked up behind closed doors
because of security reasons.
Yeah. They didn't have an advance of the movie, but they had a lot of stuff. They had, like, you know, they had imagery, they had you know, they may have had a script, they had imagery, they had a lot of that kind of stuff. Okay. I had access to their area. So I remember, and then, you know, John, Papadoke got the nod as, you know, since we had bumped him off of the first game. And so he was working on it. And honestly, my only issue with that game was that I felt that the way they treated the video broke the effect, because they got video clips and they lost their minds with the video clips, they thought the video clips are so significant that they ran them edge to edge on the monitor. Well, if you run them edge to edge on a monitor, the entire effect goes away.
Right.
You're just showing the screen, you know,
just washes
you might
it
as
out.
Well, Well, it just goes back to his original thing. I'm just staring at this big thing, yeah. You know?
Yeah.
And it has the interaction that I created with relative to targets, but it really kind of broke the effect. So I was, and I must have, I went in and talked to those guys a lot about this, and they just ignored it. They ignored it. They wanted to do their own thing. They did their own thing. And so I remember I had a bit of a falling out with Neil Nicastro because he was gushing about the game one day, and I was so upset I couldn't stand with him to play it. I was like, you know what, I don't agree with you about this game. So, so they pulled the plug after the second game. Right before that is the expo that you're talking about where I gave that speech. I had sort of inside knowledge that we weren't going to make it, you know, and the company had decided that they knew what they were doing. They knew they were going to close the pinball division, but they decided that they couldn't. They thought, man, Pinball Expo is so important to these guys. Let's let them have their weekend. Let's let them have their fun. And on Monday, we'll pull the plug. And that's what happened.
That seems like a little bit of a reoccurring theme with Expo, to where some of that has happened, you know, over time to time. That's sad.
So was this the Expo, though, where you guys had them all connected, where all the Pinball 2000s were connected and they had a tournament on them? Because I've read about this tournament that where they had them all connected and then they had, like, essentially what sounded like at the time.
That's
like
right.
A leaderboard.
Took a picture of
and
your face.
Yeah, and you had a barcode you would scan in, and then it would show the leaders on the... That concept is basically what sounds to me like, I mean, insider connected and leaderboards and everything like that, just back in, you know, back then.
So I'll tell you that when I did Insider Connected, I was very driven by, you know, after they closed the pinball division, I was fortunate enough to get invited to work on the video game side by my friend Mark Trammell. And for the next 9 years of my career, I worked on PlayStation and Xbox video games. And it was during that time in the early 2000s that when the Xbox launched, that, Xbox Live came to be. I don't know if you guys are, I'm hearing myself in my headphones. Did you guys change something?
Everything still sounds good on our end.
Okay. Where was I? Oh yeah. So I mean, I was Insider Connected. I was very motivated by creating basically a version of Xbox Live for pinball, taking what made sense. You know, taking what made sense in the way of, you know, things that fit the game. And not taking things that didn't fit the game, right? So, and that's really the driving force. Now, of course, I was influenced by things like, hey, I knew that I had connected Fast Breaks. I had connected, a Pinball 2000s, right? I knew that you could do head-to-head play. You could do tournament play. But if you think about it, that's been done like a million times since then by the video game guys, right?
Because,
I mean, we play head-to-head online.
Oh, yeah.
So Insider Connected was more driven by the experience I had in having to connect our video games in that era. And, you know, with Insider Connected, of course, you get all that stuff. You get leaderboards and you get achievements and you get tracking and stuff like that. The big hurdle when I was doing Insider Connected was, how do I recognize that it's you standing in front of the game?
Right.
In other words, I need to understand that it's you specifically. It can't just be player one.
Some kind of unique.
It's got to be
some sort. Yeah.
That's right. That's right. And so I looked at a lot of I looked at NFC. I looked at Bluetooth. I stumbled on QR codes because my girlfriend had an app that where she could buy, you know, she had a QR code. She could go up to the sandwich shop and pay for her sandwich. And I was like, hey, how's that work? And she's, you know, I got the app and I was like, QR codes, man, this is it. This is what I got to do.
And part of the consideration also has to be that you need your operators and your distributors and everyone to embrace this technology and, you know, proliferate it.
Yeah. Well, I wanted, Yeah, I wanted to create a system that worked for everybody, right? Not just end users, but also operators. That I and the one thing that we've done with it that I, you know, we envisioned, and I'm very happy that it's actually worked, is I can increase play at your location because I can drive people to your locations. Because if I run a quest on Godzilla and you don't own a Godzilla, you're going to go out and find a Godzilla.
Yeah.
Right. Which means I am physically driving people to play at your locations. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
When I say play any, you know, play any three connected Stern games, or I say, you know, play this game on this day. Well, if you don't have that game, you know, play 007 on the 7th of December, you don't have that game. You're going out to find one to do it. And so we have, you know, right now we've got real data that says, oh yeah, I see increases earnings.
It's been amazing what we've seen on the like pop-up event side and launch parties and whatever else, how much new people who are to pinball and people who are casuals previously that love the special badges and the special achievements and, oh, well, I've done 58 of the 59 things.
Or
we have people who have played, a year plus consecutively, their streaks
when
are
they're
so
on
important
vacation,
to them.
They're leaving their code with somebody else to make sure they get it still.
Yeah, it's intense.
Cool.
Yeah.
The coolest I know this sounds like hype, but the coolest stuff is yet to come. I mean, we're launching new stuff all the time, and we've got a set of cool features, and we've got features for everybody coming, right? So operators have embraced it. They've asked for things. We keep a running list of, you know, here's a bunch of operators on a forum talking about it, and I jump in there with them. It's like, you know, so what do you think about this? What do you think about that? Yeah. And they've been vocal. So, there's lots of great stuff coming relative to that stuff.
And I can tell you a big part, and you guys are hearing it too, but we hear it on the distributor side, is, you know, the home leaderboards. And the concern I know I've heard a lot internally with you guys is, you know, the cost of maintaining those servers and everything else. What we're hearing from a lot of the homes is, if you guys said, hey, $5 a month, $10 a month, or whatever.
Yeah,
it is,
it's not going to be much.
Yeah, they're way open to that. But people are hungry for that content, for sure.
And we're going to do it. And honestly, it's not going to cost much. But we do have to. So think about this, right? It's when we started out, we held it back for a couple of reasons. One, it was important for us to establish with operators that we could increase earnings with the system. And we were trying to give them a thing that was unique to them to help out. And that was leaderboards, and a huge success there. Right. So, the other thing that we were concerned about, security. There's a bunch of, not only a bunch of security issues, but also a lot of privacy issues that have to be dealt with. Mm. And so, you know,
are you aware of the situation of the gentleman who had his QR code tattooed onto his arm and then
posted a picture of it,
like, and people were scanning him in everywhere. So yeah, there's definitely fun little things with all of that you don't even think of.
No. So we spent a lot of money with, our very expensive law firm to sort of understand the environment, right? And so one of the things that, and the other functional issue with home leaderboards is that I see is growing at a rate that none of you would believe, right? If I showed you the numbers, which I can't, you wouldn't believe me. You'd go like, there's no way. And you know, no, there's like, you go, there's no way. So when we extrapolate that growth and we say, all right, so imagine, you know, I don't know, take a flyer. Imagine that 5% of these people put home leaderboards up.
Right.
What's my server cost?
Absolutely.
Right. So you go, so that's all that drives it. We're not looking, you know, we're honestly, when we do roll it out, there's going to be some small fee related to it. And it's not going to be anything that we're going to get rich on. That's not the business we're in. And we're not, you know, I've said it a million times, people don't believe me, but we're not going down the path of nickel and diming you to death with Insider Connected. It's just not, I'd have to have an audience the size of the Xbox audience for any of that to make sense. and we're just not there. So
well, I can tell you what Insider Connect is doing is a big part of what the four of us sitting at this table are into, and that's growing pinball. So those achievements, those locations, you know, pushing people to certain games and to get excited. It's just another tool in our
toolbox. That's the name of our game.
Yeah, is to grow this because
it's working. Yeah, absolutely.
We want to stay away from those, you know, historic valleys to where, oh my gosh, pinball's going away. We want to keep, you know, on this trajectory that you guys fortunately have put everyone
on. We're with you. We are all about increasing gameplay right now. As a matter of fact, I get a series of personal goals from the company every quarter. And my one of my goals every quarter for the last three quarters has been there's actually a metric. I have to increase play by X and it's tracked. And so my success to some extent is predicated on my ability to be able to deliver on that. That's why you see the activity that you see from things like, you know, Questapalooza, and you know, here we just released a bunch of spring quests, and we've got a bunch of game dedicated things coming. And so that's all about, because like, hey, if I don't increase play, and that it's a tool for me to increase play. When I increase play, we are expanding pinball. We are exposing new people to pinball. We're growing the community. It's good for everybody. It's good for operators. It's even good for my competitors. You know,
yeah, absolutely. When I do these things, good for everyone.
That's right. So, everybody should be pulling for me to hit my goals. Because
we all are.
We absolutely are. So
it's like people don't realize it, but I don't know how much I've verbalized that is a thing that's a metric. Like we all, you know, everybody has bosses, everybody has jobs to do. I have performance metrics every year related to my work, and one of my performance metrics, like I said, for you know the past three or four quarters has been increased gameplay, and there's a number associated to it, and it's a number that is tracked. It's not like a bullshit number. Like, I increased play because look at all these people at launch parties. No. There's like, I know how often people are playing. I know what they're playing. I know how they're playing. So there's like, I either made it or I didn't make it. Right.
Oh, absolutely. Well, you've been absolutely incredibly generous with your time. We have a couple questions that we're probably going to queue up on here, but the one that I had to end it for me was I'd seen recently that, you know, you've been involved on the video game side, the pinball side and all of that, and that you'd had a new inbox, like some sort of helicopter game that you'd released into the wild at Logan. Like, so is Pinball 2000 one of those ones that you have, like you have your own version at home, or, you know, where does that kind of...
I have my own version. Yeah, I'm staring at it right now. I have a Pinball 2000 Revenge from Mars the one that I like. All my games I get, a copy of. So, I have one right here. I'm looking at it.
Have you kept all your games that you've gotten? Do you have them all?
Almost. I don't have, early in my career when I worked on things like Tron and Spy Hunter, I don't have those games because I was too junior to demand that I get one. Yeah. And I was also not compensated at a point where I could afford to buy one. So I never did.
You don't have your own Tron environmental set up at your house? That's not taking up a bunch of space for you.
I wish I could tell you I did, but I don't. No. The Hawk Avenger you're referring to. The Hawk Avenger is a helicopter novelty game that I did for Lauren Bromley. In the late 80s. And this is before my time in pinball. So I had been a toy inventor already. And I was doing, after my days as a toy inventor, I started at Midway Games in 1978. And I worked on coin-operated video games for about 7 years. And then in 84, when the business tanked, I thought I was going to get laid off. So I went and found a job. I don't know that I would have gotten laid off, but I just didn't want to take the chance. So I went and found a job at Marvin Glass and Associates as a toy inventor. And I was a toy inventor for about 5 years. And that company broke up in like 1988. And when I left that company, I was on my own for a little while. And eventually I hooked up with a small little coin out manufacturer called Grand Products. Grand Products was basically made up of the old Midway executive team from when I was there, Dave Borofsky, Stan Jarocki, and those guys. And they had work, and I was, I was looking for work, and they started throwing stuff at me. Eventually I went to work for them, and it was during that time Bromley was one of their clients. They would manufacture the Bromley product. And so Lauren Bromley and her father wanted to build a helicopter game like the old Midway helicopter games, like Whirly Bird and those kind of games. And so I basically reprised it. I made my own version. And that's what you see on that. And it was during that time, it was after the first Gulf War. So Gulf Wars were still popular. And so it's themed, it's all themed out like a military helicopter thing in the desert. That's the game you saw. I have worked on, I'm blessed. I have worked on so many different kinds of games.
I have a question for
so
you.
Many.
I have a question, George.
Yeah. Yep.
Of all the things that you've done in your career, whether it be
yep.
video games, pinball, toys, what was your favorite project
so far? To so ever far, work on? So
wow, far. You're asking him to name his favorite child, Kyle.
No, just
yeah,
or the most enjoyable.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't work. It
so
was,
I'll tell you
it
that
was passion.
You know what? It's impossible to tell you that I can tell you highlights. I can tell you ones that stick in my mind as look. I have a, I mean, my portfolio. I'm so blessed.
Yes,
I'm blessed to have the portfolio I have, right? And I'm happy that I've been able to execute on all these different, in all these different mediums with all these different people, and so I love my Monster Bash. I would never let that go. I love my Deadpool. I would never let that go. I have toys from my toy days. I have, I have novelty games that Hawk Avenger, if not for the fact that it's enormous, I might have kept it forever. But it's just sort of like, it just felt like, where am I going to set this thing up?
Right.
And what am I going to, it just occurred to me, I think I'm better off, with people enjoying it over at Zesty's place. And so that I'm thrilled. People send me pictures of them playing this game. Hey, I'm playing your game, And so that's joy.
That has
that's
to be
like,
so gratifying.
It is. And I'll tell you what, games like that were hard. I was damn near a one man show. I mean, a guy named Vito Caparuso helped me with the code. And my old friend Tom Coppera helped me with some of the mechanics, but honestly, I was such a one-man show for that game. Kevin O'Connor did the production art, but I did the original art concept that he put into production. I mean, I did everything. I sculpted that helicopter.
Oh, geez.
Built that play field by my hand, by hand. I mean, it's just, I got those, a lot of those, like that tank mech, I made that work. It was just so many things.
Like that sometimes these projects are more satisfying, not always just because of how successful or how many units you sell, but the relationships and the impact that it had on your career overall. That's really cool to hear.
Yeah, there's no question. And you talk about the impact on my career. Do you know it was that helicopter game that brought me to light at Williams? Because she had that at a coin-op trade show. And when the Williams guys were doing their after show recap of what they saw, a bunch of the designers mentioned the helicopter game.
Yep.
And Pat Lawler said, I know the guy who did that. I used to work with him at Midway. And so it's like you say, one of my favorite quotations, sometimes it's attributed to the, you know, to the philosopher Goethe. And I don't know how true this is, but the quotation is endeavor and providence will provide. And I got to tell you, I've lived by that. And I believe in that. I think you do things, and sometimes even the things you're doing, they don't make a lot of sense to the, you know, economies of your life or whatever. But if you have a passion for this thing and you believe in it, you do this thing and think good things come from it, just from the act of doing, you know, like creating this thing, making it.
Amen.
Stuff happens that, you know, you can't always see it. You can't always predict it. You just have to, like, I'll tell you that I work just as hard on the ones you guys love as on the ones you guys hate, you know? So it's like, you know, I don't go half speed. If you don't like one of my things, which is absolutely normal, it's not because I didn't put myself into it. You know, it's just the way it is, right?
What's interesting to me about the modern part of your career, obviously with pinball design, is several of your games, you know, Deadpool and James Bond more recently, those games come out and, you know, the Pinside terrorists are out there, you know, saying the worst thing ever. And then, you know, eight months later, it's like, well, now Deadpool's heralded as, you know, a top five game of all time and everything else.
James Bond is quickly approaching.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, we don't do it for the naysayers. We do it because we love it, and we do it, you know, with the hopes that there's at least one person out there that's going to enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, and honestly, and I don't mean this in an arrogant way, but I don't, you know, it's hard for me to watch people judge something they don't understand. So I think that when you know, if you're going to be that quick to judge, then you had better had immersed yourself in the thing.
Absolutely.
You know, because there's a lot of sharpshooting, and man, people haven't even touched it. You know, they're just looking at it. So, and that happens not just to me. That happens to all of my, you know, all the guys that they get, look, I run the studio, and all these young guys are coming up in the studio, and I try to mentor and enable and let them be who they are. And I always tell them, dude, Do what you feel, and don't worry about this noise, because it's just, at the end of the day, it's just noise. And a lot of it comes around, right? A lot of it, it's like, you know, they hate it. They hate it. They love it. They love it. They love it. Right. You know, right. So, I mean, that's my,
at least you don't have to live the life of a lot of other artists where you're not appreciated until after you've passed on. At least you're being appreciated now.
Actively. That's an upside. Yeah, definitely.
That's true. There's something there.
Everyone sitting around this table, we love and appreciate, you know, everything that you've done, your ins and your outs.
Can't say
enough,
I
mean, it's just an incredible thrill for us to be able to, you know, sit here and even just listen to these stories. I know we're all just, as you're talking, nodding to each other and, you know, smiles ear to ear. So you to take this time today to talk to us and, you know, anyone that might be listening, we really do truly
appreciate
it.
Apparently people listen to us sometimes, so I don't believe it, but yeah.
Well, you know, I'm happy to do it. I hope people enjoy it when they listen to it. I hope that they get more insight into, into some of the thinking that goes behind some of these things and some of the reasons that things get done and stuff, right? It's,
We'll put you on the calendar to talk to you every 2 weeks, so we'll just have a standing schedule where we're just
when did you guys first reach out to me? It's only taken us 3 months to get together.
Yeah,
right?
We eventually figured it out, but again, I mean, you being this generous with your time is definitely greatly appreciated by us in the community.
I can't tell you enough how crazy my schedule is. You know, I mean, I love it. Don't get me wrong. I really love it. But
well, I know in the social media scene, you're super active. And I know that people in the community appreciate whenever you chime in on something and say, hey, this is definitively how this is supposed to be. And then everyone's like, oh, well, George said it. That's how it's supposed to be. So yeah, we're good to go.
I try. I try. I can't be everywhere. And also there's a lot of things that I can't jump into, they're just like, if, some guy says something, Spike 2 is archaic, and whatever. And I can't jump into that. Right. I can't engage. Right. I have to say, look, so if I told you the number of Spike 2 games that are working in the world, you'd fall out of your chair. So
there's always that one guy.
You can't engage the terrorist. Well, no.
Never engage with a terrorist.
No,
George.
No. I want to jump in there and say,
oh, I'm sure.
Say, dude,
that's what they want, George. Like, don't negotiate with the terrorists.
No,
don't do it.
No, what's your pinball system? Let me see your pinball system. Yeah. Oh, you don't have one? Be quiet.
Let me help you understand.
Raspberry
Let me help you understand the situation, right? It's like, I just saw, there's a great thread on the insider operators thing where these guys, like, to a man, they're like up there going, yeah, dude, my Spike 2 game's out earn everything. I was like, yeah. And so it's like, I was like, wow, this is fantastic. I don't even have to jump in here and say, yeah, I've known this for a while. I just have to say, right? Like, you guys are talking about it. Okay, it's good.
Well, this has been absolutely fantastic. Again, we can't be more appreciative of the time. And maybe if we come up with another interesting topic later on, we can have you back on.
Yeah, sorry I bombarded you with a list of questions. Good. I did. I spent so much time thinking about it and trying to shorten my list. And then I was like,
Yeah, I just think, and a lot of times, like when a guy's writing something and it's going to go to print,
yeah.
I absolutely tell them, you have to send me the questions in print.
Oh,
and
for sure.
I have to sit down and answer these questions because I don't want like a conversation to fall through the cracks. I don't want something to be misinterpreted
for sure.
Or anything like that. So when it's going to print, I insist that
send
me the questions and I will sit down. I will write. If I have to write you three paragraphs to explain this to you, I don't mind doing it,
but
I'm going to get it right. Yeah. In this format,
this is much better.
You've heard me say the words.
Yeah.
You people have heard me say the words. So it's kind of like, you can still misinterpret what I said and you can whatever, but it's different, right? Than a translation.
No, I like this. This is awesome.
We have your voice now, so we'll run it through some AI and we'll make you say all kinds of crazy things about the next game that's coming and who the designer is.
SquarePants.
Right. It's just a matter of time. It's like, I'm loving these. Like, I see this story. It's like, we're for sale. I was like, and then I look at the number that they think we're for sale for, and I'm thinking, oh man, it's like you read something about how you value businesses, right? It's like, like we couldn't possibly sell our business for that price. Nobody, it's like that is such a low price relative to the value of our business that. That's insane. That would be like giving away the business.
Just take it. Come and take it.
We've got to educate them on multiples.
Yeah. Simple math.
So yeah. Unbelievable. It's like I'm like, okay, so just how did I arrive at that number? I mean, it's like, do you think, divide that number by five, you think that's what our company makes every year? It's like, because dude, it's like this guy was so far off. It's not even funny.
It's wild. People love to stir the pot for sure.
They do. I got a question for you.
Yeah,
back to Pinball 2000. Where do you think it would be today if Williams didn't close up on it and everything? If it kept going, where do you think it would have went to?
I like to envision that things evolve and that you don't ever get it right the first time. And so I would have liked to envision that it would have evolved. Gotten easier to use, more powerful, et cetera. We could have figured out, maybe multiple monitor orientations and things so that you could get more flexibility in the where you place target, you know, the interaction. Some more modern, you know, visual projection techniques and stuff like that. So I think, you know, I like to envision that it would have evolved. I don't know for a fact that it would have, but, you know, it might have been a thing that people would lose interest and would run its course. But I don't, you know, I don't know. I think it's funny that I still see people like messing around with the integration of the two things, right? Like, you know, I see people putting monitors down on the play field, and I see sensing technology for the ball relative to the video display and stuff like that. So I see people fascinated with the concept of the transforming pinball machine. There are, you know, to date, I think all of them, including you know, Pinball 2000 as we know it, you know, there are compromises. And so I think that, you know, it's, I like to envision that it would have been one of a line, or, you know, a type of product line, as opposed to the definitive solution to pinball.
Well, I think speaking for everyone around this table, one of the things that you've been involved with or in the past that we'd love to see reintegrated and to come back, especially with Insider Connected, is Midnight Madness. We are obsessed with it. We love it. Corbin and his family.
Yeah, that's very much Dwight Sullivan.
And
you
we
know,
cornered
and,
him at Expo this year. We cornered him and we questioned him about it, because that's what everyone we talked because we talked to who else do we
John Borg.
Yeah, we talked to Borg. He's like,
go talk to Dwight.
He's like, talk to Dwight. That's who you got to talk to.
Yeah. Dwight loves and he invented it. And Dwight. And so yeah, but I mean, you're gonna see with the power of IC, you're about to see some really cool things that are along that vein, if you will.
Okay.
And I so, like what we're hearing.
I'm intrigued.
We can't.
Yeah. And that's coming. That's actually coming very soon. Might even be with the next game.
Ooh.
So,
okay. Yeah. A little tease here for the people. I like it.
He's giving them a taste.
Yeah.
All four listeners.
Oh, man.
Well, very good.
Well, thanks a lot, guys.
Yes, thank you very much for the time. Again, you've been very, very gracious, and we appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you.
We can't do it on a regular basis, but from time to time, I have no issue jumping back in, okay?
Greatly appreciate that. The next time we have something, we will definitely reach out and get back together. So thank you so much.
Sounds great. Have a good one, guys.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.
Lost my ball.
Fresh.
We're semi-fresh at this point.
Oh, man.
We're slightly stale at this point.
We have some blown minds over here.
So, in case you guys didn't notice, we just had a caller, real Topcast style, and it was the one and the only
George Gomez.
George Gomez, double G.
Man, listening back to this one is going to be a real treat for me, just picking up on all the little things that I'm sure that I missed.
Our little after-action talk here for a second.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, it was amazing.
Yeah.
I feel like he could have just went all night. George Gomez goes all night.
I was tempted to let him. I just didn't know if we had enough beer. I mean,
I didn't know if we had enough room on the memory card.
That too. Yeah. I'm like, can we switch memory cards real quick?
Eventually, we have to put a cap on it. But
what an experience, though.
Absolutely top of the mountain for us. Again, thank you, Mr. Gomez, for taking the time.
So now my second...
I like how we think him like he's going to be listening to this.
Yeah.
He might. You never know.
We should send him a copy.
My second favorite Gomez memory now is when he was working on that bond at Expo 2 years ago.
Yeah, that's my second. It was my first favorite. I mean, it's still up there just because it was like the initial experience with him for me. But this was like, it was very surreal.
Very much. I mean, we were all just looking at each other with blown minds, smiling ear to ear. And
by this point, you've all heard the whole interview, so you know.
And once again, we're not smiling too. Anything, just so everybody knows, this is exactly how it went down.
Yeah.
Exactly how it was received.
Yeah. So so we were talking, I guess you want to finish up anything else?
What were we talking about?
Yeah, so we were in mid fact check, so we can finish those up, and then we can wrap this episode up and get it out there for the people. But fact check here, Arcade Super Awesome, Kyle and I had talked about that, and I had said that they had left Sideswipe Brewing when that had changed ownership, and now the majority of their games are at Hoof Hearted.
You say it fast enough. It sounds right. Like Hoof Hearted.
Yeah, I know. I told somebody that the other day, like, Hoof Hearted Brewery? I'm like, yeah, that one.
Close enough. Yeah, in Marengo, Ohio. And then they have a ton of pinball machines at Heart State Brewing as well. So if you're in the Columbus metropolitan area.
Heart State? I saw them post that, and I was like, I don't know if I've been to that one.
I've not been to it either. It's on my list to visit.
I know I've had a beer or two from there, but yep. I've never been there.
Yeah. And then Corbin and I had the argument of, is it Micro or Mirko? Turns out it is, in fact, Mirko. There is no Micro that makes Playfields. I think you had Micro and I had Mirko.
Okay.
Heart State is saying Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah,
that's their
Columbus
address.
So definitely if you're in that area or you're visiting, check it out.
My phone's charged. I can look it up.
So it was pointed out.
I just did.
It was pointed out to me that at the 55-minute mark of the previous episode, Corbin whispers into the microphone, Grinch style, hate, hate, hate. So apparently people listen to this a lot more closely than I do.
Wait, somebody said they heard me say that?
Yeah, I don't know what I said or what
the
conversation was.
Do you remember saying that,
Corbin? But someone must have said the word hate, and in the background they hear you go, Hate. Grinch style. So,
or was it supposed to be like Dave Chappelle's, like the player haters club ball, the player hater ball.
That's
hey.
I guarantee it was a Chappelle reference.
It had to be a Chappelle reference.
Anyway,
so just know that Bug no nasty. Matter how quietly you're saying something into the microphone, we apparently have listeners out there who are isolating just the Corbin track and listening to that section.
Jeff, our listeners gonna be quite sober this episode.
They are. It's going to be a totally different sort of experience. So during the
long story short,
yeah, first pitches. I think I've said absolutely at least a few times.
You did for sure to respond.
A couple,
to
yeah, but not as many.
I said
as
it for you. I know it doesn't count.
It's just a capper when someone says something that you totally agree with. Just say absolutely.
Absolutely.
So what else you supposed to say? They can feel the full like. Yes.
Yeah,
also,
there's nothing more I can add.
Shout
to
Keith
I concur.
For not being real loud when he came in today. Thank you, buddy.
Ziggy was the loud one, as always.
Cool.
So when we were talking about TPF on the previous episode, I couldn't remember the name of the really cool booth that had like the labyrinth theme, and it was Lord of the Game Room. So shout out to Lord of the Game Room. Your booth at TPF was the blue ribbon. Hit the sounder, Kyle.
There it is.
But they had really cool mods for Alien, Labyrinth, Godzilla, Jaws, and Cactus Canyon, as well as having all of those games in their booth. So I wanted to be sure
anything
to shout them
Cactus
out.
Canyon?
Yeah, they had some cool stuff for sure that you should check out.
What are
out.
We missing on Cactus? I mean, I feel like we got a lot already.
They had a lot of stuff that you can add, like all kinds of like additional rocks and like saloon doors.
A
or
good
something?
Game.
They don't have a door. They don't have the real door kit though.
No, not the real door kit.
Yeah, that's what I'm waiting for. I guess I don't know how long I'm gonna wait.
You're gonna be waiting.
Also,
sir.
When George was talking about just like. Going in and show, like, I ran and show. I had to go show Lyman. Like, oh my god! Sorry, not to go back to that.
He
I just was thinking. I just
dropper.
Was remembering. Like, I was just remembering.
Name
like,
dropping
moments.
Left and right.
Yeah,
because
I
you know, with
Pat
he
Dollar,
wasn't just no
Lyman
he was,
Sheets and Steve Ritchie.
Because he's lived the yeah.
dream. The
dream. Like, he's hanging out with all these guys.
Pinball rock star. We were just talking.
He
to.
Probably could text any of those guys.
Yeah,
you know, he probably texts. Do you think Steve Ritchie, if he texts people, it's all in caps?
I'm at your house. I'll be there by 6. Dinner at 7.
If Steve Ritchie ever
dinner
texts
better.
Me, I'm gonna
drink at 8.
Anyway, sorry. Back to what we were talking about.
Steve Ritchie, if you are listening, email us at freshpinball@gmail.com.
Oh,
just on the podcast.
Just text
and
me.
Come in for a chat.
Well, I've heard rumors that possibly Mark Ritchie might be at Pinbrew this weekend. So
oh.
we should. We should definitely bring the equipment out.
He was there last
us.
Year, wasn't he?
He was.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, I don't. Yeah, Mark Ritchie's just as good of.
Dude,
I mean,
definitely.
I would be just as excited to
I mean,
see
how
Mark
many Mark
Steve.
Ritchies do I have down here? You yeah. know, plus Pulp Fiction.
You think he's going to be out there? Should we take some Mark
that's
Ritchie games?
What I've heard is that. I don't think we need to
no,
take any.
No, we're not changing
sure?
the lineup now.
But we have the trailer in the bus.
I would just want to, even if he had 5 minutes and just talked about his time at Capcom where he wasn't allowed to do anything. Yeah. I would love to hear those stories.
So I like smoked cigarettes and then what did you designed a game.
Ooh, I'll
that
do
never
a lot of research, so I'm ready for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
That might be what that might be what happens at like 9 a.m. at Fimbrew. I don't know. People might be like hanging out just talking.
I know. Mm. There are going to be some opportunities. So then the final item I had for the fact check was for the Turner Pinball Ninja Eclipse. I quoted the MSRP as $6,995.
It's 94, isn't it?
Oh, that changes the deal. Fucking get one coming.
$6,994.
That must be a weird ass reference that we're not getting.
So he had explained it at TPF of that they wanted to have the lowest price entry level game, and that was dropping it a dollar down. So
it's not $69.95.
There it is.
Okay.
So those are all the fact checks I have. I don't remember if during the beginning portion how much we talked about Pinbrew, but this weekend, which is going to be Thursday the 4th, Friday the 5th, and Saturday the 6th, we'll be in Girard, Ohio for Pinbrew Fest. We'll be representing our good friends in Benton, Wisconsin, Spooky Pinball. We're going to have an insane collection of their games.
It's and not even just like
we've talked about this so much on here.
It's going to be awesome.
But all I'm saying is all I've been doing is just been driving around. Wrangling up these games.
That's all Corbin, Kyle, and I have been doing. All of us, is just getting these games all ready. It's definitely
Keith lost
been
a game from his house today.
It's been, I think, a little bigger endeavor than what I first envisioned it to be. But
well, we started out at what, like 6 games, and we're up to.
I thought we were just taking like Looney Tunes. Like, I didn't
Now we're taking 17 games.
The original conversation was Looney Tunes and Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
And now there's
Dad today was
games.
Like, "You think anybody's taking like any EMs out there? You want to take this Palace Guard?" And I'm like, I can take it if you want, man. Why don't you bring it and you get your free ticket?
There
right,
we go.
Right.
So that's where we'll be. We're also representing American Pinball. So we will have Barry O's Barbecue Challenge Limited
Number
Edition.
Number six.
What else do we have? Valhalla?
We'll also have Legends of Valhalla. And
classic.
Then
you could take that home with you.
You can. That'll be available. GS
Valhalla.
Frankenstein for sale?
No, Frankenstein. Yeah, all of that.
Did you pick GTF up?
They went straight out there.
It's going, yeah, it's straight out there.
Oh, great.
Galactic Perfect. Tank Force Another, Limited Edition, a brand new in box, and that'll be...
Ooh, I should bring balls for that, probably.
Yeah, I have a box already packed up.
Oh, do you have some?
I do.
Okay.
I was fully prepared for that.
Cool.
And then we'll have a plethora of used games. We actually already sold a game last night, so shout out, Swords of Fury is already spoken for. That's going to be getting picked up this weekend, but we'll also have Jurassic Park available, Frankenstein available, possibly Tales from the Crypt. That's 50-50 at this point.
A Venom Pro and Premium.
New in box, or?
We can do show Either games one. On those where they're displays, or we also have new in box available, also with Stranger Things Pro and Premium, so... Let us know and we can get you hooked up.
Yeah. You can pick them up. We can save on shipping. We can work a deal out.
Absolutely.
Come talk to us.
Come bend Kyle's ear as he'll be spending a lot of time at the booth because I experienced in his basement today what everyone at Pinbrew will be seeing with Rob Zombie. And I will tell you what, you folks are in for a treat. Drop your dollar donation for charity into the bucket and
What's
go in
charity?
There.
What is the charity? Yeah, I was just about that.
So we'll have full details on the charity there, but essentially a community member, John Anderson, lost a daughter this year to childhood. It was a form of cancer, leukemia, and it's for her foundation.
It's a very long thing.
Yeah, we'll have full details at Pinbrew, but it's for her foundation.
A good cause.
The best cause is, you know, children should never have to suffer through life-altering events like that. But hopefully this foundation and these donations will make it to where there's less suffering. But it is the Allie Anderson
We're not laughing at
even
the
know how
I'm
to
laugh
pronounce.
At Jeff's
We're not
face.
Laughing. It's very serious.
Alvalor
I'm
laughing at Jeff's face. Rapidamaskarmacoma Research Fund.
Yes.
But we'll post this to social media. That way, everyone who's not able to attend but still wants to donate to Allie Anderson's research fund can get those donations in. But we're not charging for a game just for fun. It's to go to charity and, you know, for people to get the full experience.
Yeah, throw a buck or two in there and have fun.
If you have, you know, if you want to make a serious donation, obviously those are welcomed as well. But before we sign off here, Corbin, any last little takeaways from the George Gomez interview? I know we're still all kind of processing.
I had a thought a second ago, but I totally lost it. No, I mean, just I'm just appreciative. This is wild. You know, it's just wild times.
Yeah, a big takeaway for me for sure was that he never envisioned as Pinball 2000 to be the savior of pinball. That he always thought there should be traditional pinball as well as other options.
I thought that was cool.
I also thought it was interesting though that like it came. He said that you know it wasn't necessarily viewed as a failure in that it was still a profitable business for Bally Williams to do. It just was that there was
slot machines.
There was exponentially more profitable businesses that they were like, you know, we put the same time and energy into the slot machines, the payback is way better. And so it wasn't necessarily.
I mean, it still puts it in perspective, too, of like, you know, like Spooky or CGC or somebody that's only creating pinball machines.
Yep. Yeah.
In our current environment.
Yeah.
It is a much.
I mean, even Stern is solely.
Yes.
All the companies. I mean, I guess American is owned by companies that have divisions of
Chicago
other,
Gaming Chicago Company gaming. Would be the better closest. Example yeah. of what it was yeah, for Bally absolutely. Williams back in the day when they have these other divisions.
And if you look at it, I mean, they built Chicago. I mean, we're going to unbox a Chicago Gaming tonight, but it is one of the best built games.
Yep.
But they don't put the emphasis, the effort, the or not the effort. They it's put the effort. Not, the priority isn't correct. towards right. the pinball versus like the big games, the arcade games that they make that. Make
the
them
arcade
the big
games,
bucks, yeah.
the slot machines, everything yeah. else, they have yeah. different, you know, other priorities.
It's their priorities. And I thought that was interesting because I do feel like so much of the narrative towards the end of the 90s or the death of pinball or however you want to phrase it is that it was like, you know, they were losing so much money on it and all this stuff. But
yeah, that's
I thought
what
it was,
you always hear. Yeah.
It's, I feel like yeah. that's always the narrative you hear. And yeah. so it was just, I found it very interesting that George.
But
kind
no,
of,
it's freaking politics and
it,
more
it was
money
more
here.
Of just like, hey, there yeah. was more. They yeah. were like, there's more money here. Absolutely. So that's what we're doing. And that's and so I just thought that was a very interesting.
They could have kept a small division together and made X amount yeah. and still been profitable.
Yeah.
Because I've heard other podcasts and other. Read other things to where Williams did want to sell off just the pinball division. And essentially, I don't know if the asking price was too high or, you know, what the climate was at that time, but wasn't able to happen. So they closed the doors and moved yeah. on to other things. Yeah. And thankfully, that's business. Thankfully, Gary Stern, you know, kept things on life support and we are where yeah. we are now because so many other things would have just went to the wayside and would have been gone in a thing of the past.
Extinct.
Yeah, I mean, that's scary for sure. Final thoughts, Kyle?
Ooh,
I know.
I can't even think anymore.
It's a lot to process.
Yeah, it is. And hope to see everybody at Pinbrew.
Yeah, if you're able, again, I think we've talked about it before. If you're, I know.
Thank you, George Gomez. I mean, come on, man. What a
appreciate
stand-up guy to come on.
And not only, just like what a real, like he's just a, he's just like a real pinball guy. Like
seemed
a pinball
real excited
dude,
just to
like
talk
the,
about pinball.
He's an enthusiast.
Enthusiast and just as excited a hobby, you know, just excited about all of it as we
he's
are.
Just like us sitting
yeah.
around.
He would, I feel like it'd be cool if we had like a lot, if he was here live, but we're not going to push our luck. We'll get there.
I honestly think that all that could time. Be a potential thing for Expo or future yeah. shows. I mean, if we would have... all been at TPF, I have no doubt that we could have gotten some time with him to sit down. And he's just that kind of dude. And
he's just real. He's still on that.
He's real.
The real level. Yeah,
absolutely. Final thoughts, so cool. Zach?
Not really. It was amazing. Thanks, George. And hope to see everybody at Pinbrew.
Yeah. If you see the bus, we'll be on the green bus parked in the parking lot at different times. But
yeah, not the
absolutely.
Whole time. But
no, find us, find our booth, find the bus. Kyle, if you want to play us out with some.
What a night.
Mad pinball jingle, but you know,
time
reach
to
out
go
to
unbox and move some more games around.
Feel free to reach out to Jeff at madpinball.com or Corbin at madpinball.com, and we can get you hooked up with whatever sort of pinball madness you need. Get out there and play some more pinball, folks.
Mad pinball.
Good night.
Fresh pinball. Toppers mods, they've got them all.